And these have to be recognized. Sometimes the best thing you do for your family is to serve God with your whole heart. Sometimes to take yourself from them is more of a burden than any kind of help to God or man. And so wisdom is justified in her results. The tree is known by its fruit. Wisdom is justified of her children. What she brings forth, the wise counsel brings forth a wise outcome, a good outcome. And wisdom is justified. The wisdom of something is justified by the outcome. It's not the ends justify the means. It's that the wisdom is justified by its ends. Meaning the good end justifies the wisdom of what is done. And remember, there's all kinds of wisdom. There's the wisdom of the world, the wisdom of man. There's evil wisdom. You know, there's an evil wisdom that says, if I put screws into his thumb, he'll confess. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of wisdom. And that's a true wisdom, and it's justified. And then, look it, he confessed. I was right. Godly wisdom, not the wisdom of this world, which men speak. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 6 says, howbeit we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to naught. But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom, which God ordained before the world unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world knew, for had they known it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. It's good wisdom God has hidden from the eyes of those who are not called or chosen to his kingdom, that they would fulfill his word. That they would do according as he has planned. But we speak a different wisdom. They have a wisdom that says, if we allow this man Christ to continue, he's going to keep adding followers, and there'll be a revolution, and the Romans will come and destroy our temple and take away our place. That was the wisdom they had. And so in their wisdom, they said, well, we will put him to death, and that won't happen. But we see that wisdom was made foolishness by God. So the wisdom of man, though it has a form of wisdom, God can make it foolish. And God even says the wisdom of man is foolishness to God. The Apostle Paul said that. Verse 36. And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meat. So here the guy is, I think he's sincerely trying, seeing these miracles. And, you know, it has to be galling on one hand to some of them. But, you know, they're all different peoples. There's no monolith of Phariseeism. You know, there's no monolith. Yes, it is the group of people in general. It is Pharisees that he's coming up against, and Sadducees, and lawyers, and the teachers of the law, the scribes, and the chief priests. There's always people still interested. In spite of the things that their friends might be saying in their clique and their group, they see the miracles and they have to want to, maybe if they think if they get him to talk, come eat with me, and I'll talk to him, I'll get a really good look at him, and then I'll be able to believe. Like something will be revealed to me, something, you know. And so this man asks him to eat with him. Verse 37. Behold, a woman in the city which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment. Now, if you remember from the study in Luke, there was another incident with an alabaster box of ointment. But this ointment came in alabaster boxes, obviously, and was sold. And so, this is another incident, because that happened right before his crucifixion. This is a totally different incident. Verse 38, and she stood at his feet behind him, weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee, which had bidden him, saw it, he spake within himself, saying, this man, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that touched him, for she is a sinner. And Jesus answering said unto him, Simon, I have somewhat to say unto thee. And he saith, Master, say on. Verse 41. There was a certain creditor which had two debtors. The one owed 500 pence, and the other 50. And when they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Tell me, therefore, which of them will love him most? Simon answered and said, I suppose that he to whom he forgave most. And he said unto him, Thou hast rightly judged. And he turned to the woman and said unto Simon, Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet, but she hath washed my feet with tears, and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss, but this woman, since the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is given, the same loveth little. And he saith unto her, Thy sins are forgiven. And they that sat at meat with him began to say within themselves, Who is this that forgiveth sins also? And he saith to the woman, Thy faith hath saved thee. Go in peace. This is kind of creepy to me. And I know some people probably aren't going to like that I'm saying that. I think this is kind of creepy. Where you're thinking, and suddenly, he knows what you're thinking. Simon, I have somewhat to say to thee. And then he comes down with this little parable. And he's saying all these things. Revealing, yeah, I know she's a sinner. The only thing that would be really freaky is if he said, if he just repeated back what you were thinking. You know, Simon, you were thinking to yourself, this man, if he were a prophet, he knew their thoughts. I don't know that he walked around and heard every thought constantly. I mean, I don't even know how that would even be. God is supposed to hear all our thoughts. I mean, what it would sound to, from the human mind. Imagine a million people standing around you talking to you at once. It would sound like cacophony. That God can actually... it's too much for me to understand. It's beyond my comprehension. That's why I try to seek to understand Jesus as a man. That's why he marveled at things. So that I could understand him as a man. That if God was a man, he would marvel at unbelief. He would marvel at belief. At great belief. It's not that anything is so great that God doesn't see it. I mean, God already knew that the centurion was coming. He knew what he was going to say. And he knew this guy was going to say this before he said it. God is too great for me to comprehend. But I will understand rather than man. He knew their thoughts. He knew this man's thoughts. That's all I have to know is that he knew what this guy was thinking. To try to even comprehend the idea of understanding what everyone in the room is thinking. I only know what it's like to be inside the mind of a man who barely even knows what he thinks. I can barely understand my own mind, but to be able to understand the minds of others makes my head just swirl. And I have to let that thought go. So he relates the story, and the meaning is obvious. Two debts are owed. One owes